Welcome back to another episode of Sit Still, Look Opinionated. I'm your host, Claire Malky. That pair of vintage rollerblades that you finally unearthed from storage. Timeless. As the weather in Chicago starts to warm up, so does my personality. When the sun is more likely to give me a sunburn, I'm more likely to say yes to plans. Because of that, I've been testing out activities that I can do with my friends that aren't another game of Catan. Instead of building the longest road, I'm building character. My solution? Rollerblades. I'd like to consider myself a fearless person, but rollerblading is 100% terrifying. But Claire, I thought you said that skiing was the scariest thing ever. No, I was completely wrong. Skating is the scariest thing in all of existence. Like, when you're skiing, at least the surface below you is flat. But when you're balancing on 8 tiny itty-bitty wheels, you better be praying that Sky Daddy is watching over you. Even though falling on rollerblades is so petrifying that I had nightmares about it, once I got the hang of it, it was phenomenal. That back and forth stride was so smooth. Honestly, just as smooth as a sweet, sweet baby's bum. But the number one best thing about rollerblading is that it's outside in nature. I can't rollerblade in my apartment. I mean, I guess I could, but I probably wouldn't get my security deposit back. When I'm rollerblading, it's like sensory overload, in a good way. There's something about the smell of the outdoors, so many aromas for my little snoot to smell. When I'm skating, I can get a whiff of everything. The trees, the grass, the garbage bin, the bird shit, and even the blood from my nasty elbow scrape. And once I've had my fill for the day and unleashed my feet from the wheel death traps, I'm instantly reminded how fucking crazy walking is. Walking. Revolutionary. Turns out I didn't need much to bring me back to humanity. Just some good old fashioned wheeled shoes to remind me that, hopefully, the ground, or gravity, will always be there to catch me. I guess you could say it's timeless. Speaking of senses, we've got a sensational show for you all today. We've got our headlines, we've got our sketches, and we have got my stellar interview with Mac Gordon of Theater in the Dark. Stay tuned for some great conversations. In honor of my wannabe summer vibes, I'm drinking a classic SSLO margarita. Grab your drink and let's get started. Up next, this week's headlines. Florida Senator and DUI poster boy Matt Gaetz has been under investigation for sex trafficking. Let's hope Matt gets what he deserves. UConn freshman Paige Buechers was named AP Women's Basketball Player of the Year. This is the first time a freshman has won the award without getting stuffed into a locker. Baseball had its opening day last week. Fans were excited to take part in all of their favorite pastimes, such as buying hot dogs from vendors, yelling at the pitcher, and participating in the seventh inning COVID test. The Biden administration announced new wind turbines to capture offshore wind. When asked, the president said he was a big fan. Georgia has passed new laws limiting citizens' access to voting. Any voter requesting an absentee ballot will instead be sent a huge dildo to go fuck themselves. The MLB has pulled its All-Star game from Atlanta after Georgia passed its controversial voting law, essentially telling Georgia, "You're out of here." White evangelicals are refusing to take the COVID vaccine, potentially prolonging the pandemic. "Jesus Christ," said God. "What now, Dad?" said Jesus. "Oh, just these idiots on earth," said God. And the Holy Spirit was like, "You're always shutting me out of things." Donald Trump's donors were tricked into getting charged multiple times for what they thought were a one-time donation. Funnily enough, the Sit Still Patreon page is also a one-time donation. Over the weekend, a pond in a Florida county became contaminated with wastewater. Or as locals call it, another pool. The U.S. military closed a failing portion of the Guantanamo Bay prison. The prisoners will have to be transferred to a new water boarding school. The U.S. Supreme Court sided with Google over Oracle over an Android copyright dispute. This is almost like when Tina's sister made out with Veronica, who made out with Jeremy, who totally slept with the quarterback from the rival high school. Transportation Security Pete Buttigieg will use Biden's infrastructure plan to build bridges over our divided country. Tell you one thing, though. Doesn't matter how many bridges you build, there will always be trolls who live underneath them. A series of earthquakes has rattled the Los Angeles area. Iceland is like, "Bish, we got a volcanic eruption from our quakes. What are you gonna do? Get worse traffic? Ha 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 ha!" A new report shows Americans who are experiencing pandemic burnout are fighting it with new hobbies like baking. All you need to get started is a lighter, grinder, and a whole lot of weed. The National Labor Relations Board concluded that after two employees criticized Amazon, they were fired. I guess you could say Amazon sent them packing. Yeah! On average, the U.S. is administering more than 3 million COVID shots per day. On average, I miss more than 3 million shots when playing a game of pickup basketball. President Biden named 11 nominees to serve as judges on federal courts. The GOP thinks the nominations may be backhanded. Yet, Biden believes they are a perfect game, set, match. And that's this week's headlines.
I am Fee, and yes, I am the extra medium, and yes, this is the Extra Medium Podcast, my channel to channel from the Sit Still Look Opinionated Studios. Yes, I commune with the spirit world, but only with the rarest of living spirits, and yes, only those with blue check marks. Yes, I. The Extra Medium Fee? Channel only true celebrities. Not influencers, though. I'm extra, not basic. I bring you now to a recording of my latest celebrity channeling.
OMG, babe, I've been wanting this for, like, ever.
Oh, you know, this stuff weirds me out.
Quiet! The Extra Medium Fee is ready now. Who is it you want to summon, my child?
Oh my god, they have to be alive, right? Oh, I should have thought about this.
Justin Bieber. We both know it's gonna be your Biebs.
The living, blue, checkmarked soul of Justin Drew Bieber. Hear me now. Come inside me, Justin.
She said that? Oh, yo, can this extra medium hook up an extra large soda?
Shut it, Danny.
His spirit takes me. I'll be
Oh, not again. Which one of you is my biggest fan?
Oh my god! Oh my god, is it you, Justin?
Let's do this. Be quick, though. This never lasts long. Who are you?
Who, me? I'm Danny. I'm Candace's boyfriend.
You are so beautiful. I adore you. Can you sing something to me?
Nah, the lady who DoorDashed my soul over here can't see my range. Yo, Danny, is that a tattoo of a great white?
Yeah.
Fire. I got a bear and a lion on my chest, and an eagle on my stomach.
Dude, I want more ink, but she's not down.
Baby girl, you just need to let your man do his thing. You've landed a unicorn right here.
Word? Thanks, Justin.
Call me Drew.
Drew.
It's Justin.
Oh, okay. Justin. If I give you my address, will you send me a lock of your hair?
Always the same question. Danny, it's a nasty scrape there.
Oh, this? Ate shit. Grinding at the park.
I knew it. I wish I could skate more.
This is not what I expected.
Oh, now I feel the connection getting loose. Take care, Danny. Stream my song. Yes, I, Fee, the extra medium, have returned. And your session, did you enjoy?
That was bullshit. You'll be hearing from me on Yelp. Danny, come on.
Yo, Miss Extra Medium, here's a 20 for a tip. That was awesome.
Danny, let's go.
Oh, Justin. Yes, he just loves coming over for a visit. Which living legend will I channel next week? The Rock, Billy Irish, Tupac? Yes, that depends. And my next client that pays me a fee. Tune in for the next installment of the Extra Medium podcast from the Sit Still Look Opinionated Studios by, yes, B, the Extra Medium.
Trump supporters are notorious for having terrible judgment and a false sense of reality when it comes to facing the truth. Sometimes, talking to Trumpers is like talking to a rock. For more insight on what that's like, please welcome my pet rock, Jean.
Yes. Hello, Claire. Thank you for that perfectly tasteless introduction.
Excuse me?
Us rocks have been around since the beginning of time, whereas humans have only been here in this squishy sack of flesh for a few millennia. So who are you to compare us to members of Trump's fan club? Those creatures are against the planet's welfare, and seeing as I am quite literally a part of the planet, I do not appreciate being collated to such things.
Oh, my gosh, I'm so sorry. I had no idea.
Yes, the much more common turn of phrase is, it's like talking to a wall. Which may be a bit on the nose when referring to a Trumper, but at least the metaphor is clear.
Wait, walls can talk too?
I am wall.
Barely.
Ah.
I am wall?
How do you suggest we get through to these walls?
You must be patient. Don't tell them they're wrong. Ask questions that force them to reflect on their choices so they arrive at that conclusion all on their own. It's like brainwashing, but in a good way. Watch. Hello there, Mr. Wall.
I am Wall.
Yes, I am so sorry to see your mother had to be admitted into a nursing home for full-time care, which you will only be able to afford through the government-aided programs, correct?
I am Wall.
Yes, you are. Were you aware that a rather prominent part of the GOP's platform is to either significantly reduce or eliminate such federal aid programs altogether?
I am Walt.
There, you see?
Ah, that's so easy.
Don't be fooled. Chances are they will either forget the conversation, say they forgot the conversation, or deny the validity of the conversation, along with all the evidence you provide, even if it's directly from the GOP website. Patience is key, so just remember to be strong like a rock.
Thank you so much, Jean. Lovely having you.
I am Wall.
The character Wall, depicted on Sit Still, Look Opinionated, has no part in the Marvel Cinematic Universe canon. Any resemblance to real persons or other real-life entities is purely coincidental. All characters and other entities appearing in this work are fictitious. Any resemblance to real persons, dead or alive, or other real-life entities, past or present, is purely coincidental. Please don't sue us. Hey, listener. Thanks so much for checking out this week's episode of Sit Still, Look Opinionated. It really does mean a lot to us over here at the Sit Still Studio whenever we receive kind messages about the episodes. But what we love even more is ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts. And did you know, when you write a review, it actually helps other people find the show? Pretty neat, right? And if you want to keep the party going, just come on over to Patreon. We truly do have the best Patreons, and you, yes, you, could be one of them. Join our patrons Anna, Jamie, Anthony, Lara, Andy, Christina, and Sam. To find out more, visit us at patreon.com/sitstill. Up next, my interview with Mac Gordon from Theater in the Dark. So for today's Chicago Artist Spotlight, we have Mac Gordon. He is a theater artist based out of Chicago and Vancouver. Thanks for coming on Sit Still, Look Opinionated, Mac.
Yes, thank you. I'm glad to be here, Claire.
Yes. Mac is one of the producers for Theater in the Dark, and we're going to be talking about Theater in the Dark today and the journey with that theater company. So Mac, could you tell us a little bit about your background and who you are a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. So I am currently living in Canada, in Vancouver. I was in Chicago for a couple of years from 2018 until that fated year of 2020 when our prime minister at one point kind of said, everybody come home. And I didn't for a long time, but then eventually I did. But I went to school at the University of Victoria, which is on Vancouver Island, and I studied theater there. I actually did applied theater, which at the time it was the only program in North America that offered a major in applied theater. Applied theater is doing theater for non-entertainment purposes. So doing things like police officer simulation training, medical student simulation training, seminars in schools with elementary school kids and high school kids, and just kind of anything that falls under that realm of not pure entertainment. So from there, I graduated and I moved over to Vancouver, which is sort of the biggest city near Victoria where you could do work in theater. And for the from 2009 until 2018, I was a professional artist in Vancouver, and then sort of decided that I wanted to see what a bigger city might hold for me. And you know, you kind of choose between LA and New York, but I thought, no, I think Chicago might be the place for me as a city that's really kind of in touch with its independent artists. And it's sort of more experimental storefront theater kind of programming. So once I got to Chicago, I took a second city class right away, because it seemed like the best thing to do. And that's where I met Corey Bradbury, who is my co-producer and the producing artistic director for Theater in the Dark. And he and I sort of got to talking about putting a show on together. And, you know, being a couple of dudes who had not a lot of access to big budgets, I had this show that I wrote in 2014 called Three Stories Up. And Three Stories Up was a crime noir with like poetic description and detail. And when we first staged it in Vancouver in 2016, we decided that the language was evocative enough that it would make sense to do it in the dark, to let people rely purely on their imagination instead of visuals. It saved us a bunch of money budget-wise because we didn't have to pay costumes, we didn't have to have set designs, we didn't have to have lighting designs, but we did have to be creative by figuring out how two actors navigate a pitch black room around an audience in a pitch black room and how all that stuff works. So I had this show and I told Corey about it and we decided to put it up. So that was Halloween of 2019 was our inaugural show, which was three stories up. We did it at Thorndale. The Thorndale, it was like right off the Thorndale line of the Red Line. Mm-hmm. And it went great. Like kind of word of mouth was really great for it. The critical reviews were really good. It was just an interesting show to do and something that I think people in Chicago hadn't really interacted with much, theater in the dark. So from there, Corey and I started to work on War of the Worlds adaptation that we put together, which was Halloween of 2020. And initially we were going to stage that in person as well. And then when the pandemic hit, we sort of saw the opportunity to take this existing show we had three stories up where there was no visuals and shift it over to the virtual where I think especially right at the beginning, that was in May of 2020. So in May of 2020, a lot of the theater companies were still scrambling for what their digital virtual content was going to be. And we kind of had something that was pre-made, meant to be listened to and not seen. So we turned off all the cameras, hoping that people would that would jive with people in the sense that I think people had a lot of screen fatigue then. So for our shows, you don't have to look at the screen. You can set up your speakers, set up your computer, make yourself a nice cozy dark space and turn your visual information system off for a little while and tap into that world of imagination. And kind of built from there these four shows now. So three stories up, A War of the Worlds, which was our War of the Worlds adaptation, A Christmas Carol at Christmas Time, and now we're doing Moby Dick. And they're sort of these like, they're like 90-minute classics illustrated versions of these like literary classics is kind of what we're growing to see them become. But we're actually starting to look onto another avenue of doing a slightly more experimental kind of studio series with these shows, something that can be a little bit more experimental and evolving as far as how we interact with the art and what we present to people.
Wow, that is a really amazing story. And for a theater company, it's I feel like you all were sort of in the best world possible because I've seen a lot of, you know, companies really trying to work with not being in person and relying a lot on that spectacular visual element. So I think it's very exciting that you all have really tapped into some sort of like emotional vulnerability in a way. When I listened to War of the Worlds, I was actually quite frightened, and just the whole experience of it was very enrapturing. So I wanted to ask a little bit about how you got involved with Theater in the Dark, but it is really your project. What was it like creating a brand new theater company from the ground up?
You know, the hardest part is nobody knows who you are, right? So yeah. It can be really difficult to get reviews when you're just starting. It can be really difficult to get the eyes on your company. So Corey, I'm lucky to be working with Corey, who is quite a brilliant mind when it comes to the producing side of thing and those fun kind of fine details. I definitely fall more on the side of the artistic and the content. And Corey is more in charge of budgeting, things like that. So we kind of knew that. Well, when we named the company Theater in the Dark, we were like very strategic to be like, okay, what is this? That's what the name should be. So no one has to go like, you know, oh, the name of this theater company is like Blue Box. What does that mean? What do they do? Theater in the Dark tells you exactly what we do Theater in the Dark. And the setup for that first show For me, actually, what was the most, one of the most interesting things coming from Vancouver, the cultural fabric of Vancouver is very different than Chicago. It's a really beautiful city here when it's not raining. And when it's raining, it sucks. So a lot of people stay inside when it rains and they go outdoors and do outdoor activities when it's nice out. So the theater community here is meager for sure. But in Chicago, there's so many people who support the arts and love the arts. And you can go down the street with hand flyers and hand them out to people at street festivals, and it will actually turn into ticket sales. Whereas in Vancouver, you'd be pretty hard pressed to get someone sight unseen just from an elevator pitch. But we also, our company gives us the opportunity to give a really good elevator pitch. So like we went to, for Three Stories Up, we went to the Noir Festival at the Music Box movie theater. And we just stood in front and gave people hand flyers, which like, yeah, okay, nobody wants a hand flyer. But the pitch that came along with it was it's a 90-minute long live film noir told completely in a dark room. And people would go, actually, give me one of those hand flyers. That sounds interesting. And and so, yeah, for us, it was just about finding that niche, finding that thing that people had never seen before, and making sure that we could get that information across to them as quickly as possible so we could catch their eye and have them look deeper into it.
That is a very smart strategic move that you all did, especially knowing how Chicago does have a lot of those different niches. And, you know, there is the comedy community, there's the theater community, there is still the film and television aspect of it. So that was a really smart move for you all to do that.
Yeah.
So you had mentioned this like theater noir, and in previously you had talked about the classics a little bit. And now that your company is a little bit more established, where do you all draw inspiration from for your shows? In choice of picking your shows, that's what I mean.
Yeah. In the curation of the show. I think yes. Corey and I both approach it from a very different place. And I think that's kind of cool. It actually, like, he and I work well together because we fill out each other's weaknesses, I think. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to speak too much for him, but I think he comes at it a lot more from that literary side of taking literary classics and adapting them, what's the word I'm looking for when it's like closer to the text. He wants to tell the story that already exists there and tell it well and keep the lights completely off and do the thing that we do. And sometimes I get a little bit more into the world of like, when I was working on the Christmas Carol adaptation, I was initially writing it to be done for the stage. We kind of were working on about three or four projects at the same time so that we could roll out show after show after show. And like, even in that Christmas Carol, I had some stage directions of things for the dark room where like suddenly there would be like a ghostly light and you would see the ghost of Christmas past move for a second and then you'd turn off the light and reshroud the hood, as it were. So for me, I kind of come to all of my artistic creation from a place of what is not boring, what is the most interesting. It doesn't have to make sense as long as it keeps people on the edge of their seat. But then, you know, also I want it to make sense too, but that's not my primary goal. You can always go back and iron out the wrinkles to make things make sense, but you can't always go back and make a boring scene interesting.
Mm-hmm. It's very true.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, for me, it's more about what gives me a good springboard into telling a good story. And I think for Corey, it's more what stories does he like that he wants to share? So for me right now, like, we don't know exactly what the next project is going to be. I kind of mentioned that we might do like a studio series kind of thing where I have a one-person show, which is about grief and loss. And it doesn't fit into that world of adapting literary classics for the dark, but it does fit into the world of we're in the dark. I'm in my microphone. We're together. I'm live on this side. And yet you're getting a virtual show with someone who is 5,500 miles away from you speaking directly to you. So yeah, for me, springboarding into stories is what I'm looking for. So that one person show is, like I said, it's an essay on grief that mixes game show elements with memoir. basically.
Oh, wow.
So anytime anything gets too heavy in that show, the music goes up. And what I would do, I did this show live too, is I would bring people from the audience up on stage and we would play like the Newlywed Game. And we'd find out how well two people in the audience knew each other. And then we also played a couple rounds of Family Feud at the end where we'd team people up and we play these games and then there'd be prizes. It's a whole thing. But I'm also kind of right now working on exploring some ideas of erotica. What would a Theater in the Dark piece look like if it was erotica? How could that be a safe place for everyone, but also an interesting, intriguing, evocative space? Mm-hmm. And then I'm also looking right now, working through telling an adaptation of the Bible story to do like a Theater in the Dark Easter play, kind of a hallucinogenic sort of ayahuasca trip into the story of Jesus dying on the cross. So I don't know what that's going to look like exactly yet, but those are the kind of three things that I'm percolating and cooking as far as shows right now.
Those all are very much pique my interest. I was recently telling my partner, he didn't grow up in a Christian religion. And so he didn't really know the story of Jesus. And I was telling him like, oh, you know, he got betrayed. And it's very like emo and goth and kind of in like intense. Totally. And I really enjoy viewing it through that lens of sort of like these teenage boys who are, you know, out there and trying to figure themselves out. But besides that, there's a and the game show.
Teenage boys out there trying to figure themselves out. That's such an interesting way to put the story of Jesus. I like thinking about it that way.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fascinating.
I could talk about, you know, religious principles forever and understanding how those stories like interweave into today's culture. But back to Theater in the Dark, I was wondering when you were discussing these different projects that you're all trying to interweave and working with a new company and deciding what best fits a Theater in the Dark show versus what might not be the direction you're going in. How do you reconcile that decision?
I mean, I don't know that we have really had to. Mm-hmm. What's kind of occurred so far is like I will either have a script or be working on something and I'll bring it to Corey and he'll be like, yeah, let's do this, like with Three Stories Up, like with Christmas Carol. And then sort of the way Corey approaches it is he comes to me usually with a pitch and he'll pitch me and he pitched me War of the Worlds and he pitched me Moby Dick. And so kind of so far we've both just sort of made two pitches and the other person's been like, yep, sounds good. And I think we're now at a really interesting spot because we've only been a theater company for 2 years. But because of the pandemic and because of our ability to pivot quickly and our ability to put out work quite fast, we have managed to establish a little bit more of a name for ourselves than I think we would have in a non-pandemic world. Mm-hmm. So now we're kind of at this interesting crux in the company where we're like, okay, right now we're doing digital shows. People ask us all the time after the show's done, like once the theaters are open, are you going to continue to do the digital shows? We've got people listening now from 40 different states, 12 different countries, most of the provinces in Canada. We've had listeners from Switzerland. We've had listeners in Australia. It's just like this cool opportunity that you don't think about with theater to reach more of a global community and audience. So we're kind of going like, okay, what do we do next? Do we stage War of the Worlds live in the dark now that we've done it as a radio show? So it's kind of like takes minimal rehearsal because we've done all the acting rehearsing. We just have to block it and stage it, which in the dark is difficult, but mm-hmm. something you have to do anyway. Or do we make a new show that is live and transition once we rehearse that whole show live and turn it into an audio recording that our followers from around the world who aren't in Chicago can potentially listen to? And I think the answer is probably both of those things. It just depends on any given project.
That's so interesting you say that. And I've noticed that's a little bit of a theme with any artist who's had to pivot into some digital medium is now they, between classes or, you know, experiences, having this open door to bringing in people from all over the world. And it does sort of pique my interest about what the future will look like in our, you know, global community as opposed to, you know, city by city.
Yeah, Moby Dick, we have actors in New Orleans. We have, I'm in Vancouver, Corey's in Chicago. It's like pretty cool. We had for Christmas Carol, someone from Philadelphia, like being able to put out the audition call and hear anybody's audition is amazing too. It's a lot of auditions to go through when you're dealing with the entire world of aspiring actors, but you know, it's good. That's not a bad thing at all. It just makes it hard to pick.
Yeah, that is another thing too. When you open your net wider, there's more that will come into it.
Mm-hmm.
You were mentioning blocking and things of that nature in the dark. And what are some advantages and conversely difficulties about theater in the dark?
I mean, the opportunity, like I've been an actor for 10 or 12 years now since finishing school. And the opportunity to perform without anyone looking at you, but to still be alive and in the space with them is really unique. And it really opens you up to dropping your inhibitions and getting, I think, to the like emotional core truth of characters without worrying about self-consciousness of what you look like when you're doing those things. So like sometimes even with just the theater and the three stories up that we did virtually first, I took like a time lapse video of what I looked like when I was performing because I was just into it and it was not pretty, but I was like, oh, that's like pretty raw. I can see where things are tapping in there that I wouldn't necessarily allow myself to do if I knew that people could see what my face looked like while I was doing it.
That's so true. I was recently doing some self-tapes because I'm also an actor, if any of our listeners don't already know that about me. And yeah, it's a lot to be like, oh, is that really what my eyebrows do? Is that really what my, like, the furrow of my brow looks like? It can really take you out of the moment. So I'm imagining, yeah, being in the dark and just being with your microphone. Like, I feel like sometimes, I mean, correct me if you have a different thought on this, but it can be quite intimate just being with the microphone.
So intimate. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, I often will talk about this with our other actors is that like you are present in someone else's ear. Like you can't be much more intimate with someone that you've never met than to be directly up against their ear telling the story of like losing your wife during a Martian invasion. Like it just gives you so much room for nuance. It gives you so much room for subtlety, but it also, because it draws on this like radio play tradition, gives you the opportunity to chew the scenery too. There's a part in Moby Dick where Stubb the mate is telling all of his men in his whaleboat to pull, my dear heart's alive. He's just like essentially giving them the like direction to row, and they get too fast and he's like, slow it down. Now pick it back up. Let's go. Let's drive into it. And you just get this like opportunity to take things down and bring things up in these dynamics that you wouldn't have unless you were right up in someone's ear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because for anyone who isn't an actor or performer, if you're seeing a live stage performance out in the park, you know, that actor is probably their main goal is to make sure that you can hear them in the first place. And, you know, their focus might be, you know, how am I presenting in this shape? What is my body doing? So it's a somewhat of a completely different art form what you all are doing.
Yeah, well, and that speaks to the transition over to the disadvantages of it is like the tech stuff sometimes can be very difficult because we're performing from 5,500 miles away from each other. Because we're using Zoom, we just use Zoom. And anybody who's been on a Zoom meeting knows that like there's sometimes lags that you deal with. There's sometimes, internet goings ins and out of. So we have to really prepare technically, make sure everyone's plugged into Ethernet, make sure the microphone that you're using is the right kind of microphone so that it won't clip, make sure all your settings in Zoom are set properly. And then is the like really difficult part is once you enter the mix as a performer, I can hear myself through my headphones, but I can't hear how I sound relative to anybody else.
Ooh.
So I don't have any idea when I'm performing if my internet has completely cut out and I'm gone from the performance, especially if I'm in the middle of a long monologue. I'm going to do that whole monologue until I finish and get to the end and see on my Zoom the chat message from Corey being like, your internet's gone. That's not ever happened to me, but that is always the thing that you're like, oh, okay, here we go, launching into this. Hope I can get through to the end and still be here. We had one show in Three Stories Up where Corey, who runs the Q-Lab from his computer, so all of the auxiliary sound comes from him. And in Three Stories Up, there was lots of drones and sort of like atmospheric sounds. And at one point, me and Bethany Arrington, who was the other performer with me, she was talking and all the music left. And I looked over at my Zoom and Corey had been kicked out. And we were about 3/4 of the way through the show. And so she was finishing up her like monologue and I was like, oh no, this is up to me. I have to figure out what to do right now. So I just said, we're experiencing some technical difficulties. We're going to take a quick 5-minute break. If you need to go to the bathroom, please go ahead now. We'll be back with you as soon as possible. And then I sat there in the silence. I was like, oh no, I can't. So I pull out my phone and like open Spotify, and I had a Spotify playlist of songs from Three Stories Up, and I just like hit it and played my phone into the microphone, so there was some elevator music while people were waiting.
Oh my goodness.
And then I'm texting Corey and I'm like, oh my god, where are you? And he's busy doing something else, so he's not replying, and finally kicks back up. She's okay, we'll resume the show. And you know, it is that exciting thing about live theater that doesn't translate if you're doing a recorded show, is there isn't that energy, there isn't that risk, there isn't that presence that you as a performer and you as a spectator get to have.
Mm-hmm. That's one of those things about any live anything, is like there is that element of like, oh my gosh, this could all come crashing down around me. And these people have paid money or have left their home like before the pandemic or whatever. And it is a little bit wild.
My favorite thing when something does go wrong. Like if I go to the theater, I like to go to previews, because you go to a preview and chances are someone's going to mess something up somewhere. And that's the part where I'm like, oh, yeah, let's go. I'm getting energy from this.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Yeah, it's like, oh, my gosh, like I want to have that suspension of disbelief. But at the same time, I'm like, oh, let me see who you really are and how you recover. And that's something about improv that I very much enjoy. But that's for a different conversation. So for our listeners who maybe want to check out Theater in the Dark, learn a little bit more about your company, where would you direct them?
Go to theaterinthedark.com. That's been a big part of our, we were talking a little bit more earlier about strategies for how to like get out there. And we've really put a lot of work into our website. And I think it looks really cool. You can go to like the Moby Dick section of it, and it's all themed Moby Dick, and it's got recipes for drinks that you can make while you listen to the show. There's like a grog recipe on there. But you can also go back and see some of the past shows. You can see what the War of the Worlds kind of like theme all looked like. You can see what the Three Stories Up pictures and all that. You can kind of go through these different worlds. And then you can also stream any of those shows from the past are now available as anytime streams. So that is the other benefit on top of theater, is we actually have the opportunity to replicate it. So if someone's missed it, they can get something. And it's not quite like a theater archival where sometimes they're like really poorly filmed because there's no filming. It's just the voices. So you hear the show, it's basically just an archived version of one of the live shows that we did. And actually the clip that I have for you is real sound too. It's like from one of the performances, we just clipped it out and cut it. So it's kind of cool to give people the opportunity to hear what the show actually sounds like.
I think that's really amazing that you all took that opportunity to save those performances so that people can listen to them if they've missed the show, but that it's still somewhat of a live performance, just not live in that moment.
Yeah, yeah.
How long is Moby Dick running for?
Moby Dick runs until April 10th. And just yesterday, we came out with the live anytime stream. So right now, anybody who wants to listen, actually, it's a really interesting conversation that we have, too, of like, okay, here's this product. What are the pros and cons of releasing it so that people have to listen at 8:00 Central Thursday to Sunday? And you have to sit there and listen to the entire thing all at once, which is not the way people are used to consuming their audio content mm-hmm. these days mm-hmm. versus giving someone the option of a more Spotify-esque stream that you can listen to 20 minutes and then you can listen to the next 20 minutes and you can go on the bus and listen to the end of the show. And I think this show is particularly conducive to that anytime stream because it's really rich. It's really dense. There's a lot of beautiful language. And for my own listening ears, I think I would love to listen to that language and be able to take breaks and really absorb it. So mm-hmm. I think this anytime stream that we have now is a really good option for people, especially our age, who maybe are a little bit more on the go even during a pandemic and can kind of take their time listening to it instead of having to set aside a full 90-minute, two-hour slot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's definitely a big thing about this like digital art age is like the consumption of it. And we as a podcast, we experience similar things. You know, we'll see people listening to my opening monologue and then, you know, another chunk and another chunk. And, you know, maybe they'll finish the episode by the time the next episode comes out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Totally.
Well, Mac, this has been a really great interview. Thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me, Claire. Again, if you want to get tickets, theaterinthedark.com, they're pay what you can. They run until April 10th. There's an anytime stream available as well as live broadcasts at 8 p.m. Central, Thursday to Saturday and 7 p.m. Central Sunday.
Yeah. And now a snippet from A White Whale or Moby Dick.
Next day, a large ship, the Rachel, was seen bearing directly down upon the Pequod, all her spars thickly clustered with men.
Bad news. She brings bad news.
Has seen White Whale!
I recall the captain's words even now.
Aye, yesterday. Have you seen a whaleboat?
Where was he? Where was it?
We were engaged with the Shoal of Promacidi. Yet in swift chase, the head of Moby Dick loomed up out of the blue water. Our spare boat gave chase and fastened him and was towed out of sight, then nothing.
Fastened, but not killed.
Not killed?
Whoever heard of a whale ship cruising after one missing little whale boat in the height of the whaling season?
For God's sake, I beg for 8 and 40 hours. Let me charter your ship. I will gladly pay roundly for it. My boy! My own boy is among them for 8 and 40 hours only.
Oh, it's his son he's lost. What says Ahab? We must save the boy.
He's drowned with the rest of a man.
You have a child too, Ahab.
My boy, my little lamb, 12 years old. I will not go till you say aye to me. Do to me as you would have me do to you in the
run.
Like case.
Run, men, now. Stand by to square
cut
on the yards.
Cut the rope yard.
Captain, what if Pip were to fall overboard?
Avast, I will not do it. The whale's moved on, and even now I lose time.
God bless ye, man.
And may I forgive myself. Mr. Starbuck, you are relieved of the watch. Mr. Flask, brace forward. Let the ship
God himself is against the old man. Forbear. 'Tis an ill voyage. Ill begun, ill continued. Let me square in the yards while we may, old man, and make a fair wind of it homeward, to go on a better voyage than this.
All your oaths to hunt a white whale are as binding as mine, and heart, soul, and body, lungs, and life, old Ahab is bound. And that ye may know to what tune this heart beats, look ye here. Thus I blow out the last fear.
Theater in the Dark's performance of A White Whale or Moby Dick is available through Saturday, April 10th. If you can't catch the show during that time, a live recorded performance is available for anytime stream at theaterinthedark.com/stream/AWWOMD-stream.
And that's all for today. If you have any questions or comments about today's episode, you can email us at sitstilllookopinionated@gmail.com. And make sure to follow us on Instagram at sitstill_lookopinionated. And now on Twitter at sitstillpodcast. And make sure to subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts. And if you didn't hear that right, please write a review. Please write a review! This podcast was produced by Michael Dritto and Claire Malky, and written by myself, Claire Malky, Michael Dritto, Fee Basanyavichis, and Gabriel Scavor. Theme music by Terrence Jackson. Transition music by Christina Walter. Research by Ross Black. This program is partially supported by a grant from the Illinois Arts Council Agency. If you would like to support this podcast, please visit and subscribe to our Patreon page linked in the show notes. This podcast was recorded on the land of the Kickapoo, Peoria, and Potawatomi nations. And of course, I'm your host, Claire Malky. Oh, and don't forget, stay opinionated. Bye.